Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's September 16th, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We have some great guests in the room tonight. We're talking with Patrick Rue from the brewery, the editor of Beer Advocate magazine, and some other great guys from Beercraft and Nunez Chocolate and beyond. So Ben Keen from Beer Advocate, welcome, man. Congratulations.
Thanks, Jimmy.
You know,
great to be back.
I've known you for many years as a beer writer, and now you've got the big title. You're the managing editor?
That is correct. I'm not sure I would call it a big title, but it's a title. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to lean on you a lot tonight. You're going to be helping ask questions. We've got a special guest in the room. We've got Patrick Rue, one of our favorite brewers from the brewery in California. How are you, man?
What's up, Jimmy? Doing pretty good. How about you?
You're here barnstorming the East Coast, aren't you?
Yeah. Seeing all my favorite people.
All right. And we got Ben from Beercraft, one of our buddies.
Hey Jimmy, how's it going?
And Ben, you're out there. What, you're making beer systems?
I'm no longer with Beercraft. I just opened a company called Pearl Black Draft Innovations, and we're doing all sorts of like counter pressure systems, like draft consulting, kind of bringing New York to the top end of dispensing.
Well, you're awesome, man. I've seen you do everything from being a chef to a farmer to a innovate with the first growler fill systems in New York. So
for sure.
Welcome to the show. All right, so Ben, we're going to talk to Patrick Rue to start this off. So what brings you to the East Coast, Patrick? It's always a pleasure having you here.
Well, thank you. Beer brings me here. So we went to the Captain Lawrence Soured in September festival, which was really cool, a lot of fun. And we did a big kind of a tap takeover. Not quite a tap takeover, but a nice 40 lines of our beer at Ginger Man last night, which was a lot of fun.
Only 40 lines?
Only 40 lines, yeah. It's the biggest event we've ever done. Our tasting room has 40 draft lines, but rarely fills them up. So it was fun.
Well, it's pretty cool. I mean, you had a section in the back. If you've ever been to the Ginger Man, it's on 36th Street in Manhattan. And there's a nice big bar up front, but there's a little room in the back. And you were doing some kind of a tasting there or a pairing event?
Yeah, we paired six of our beers with some delicious cheeses. I did my best to come up with the cheese pairings. It was awesome.
I mean, we've had some great beers of yours. The other day I tasted the sour and the rye for the first time. But the stuff you had last night, I mean, you had like 18% stouts. You know, I didn't realize really how much of a selection of beer you have. And I know Ben and Ben have probably had more of your beers than I have. But tell us about your whole program, because you're really doing, I think you're doing a very unique thing. And everyone knows that is listening, so.
Thanks. Yeah, we make about 70 different beers a year. Most of these go to our club members. We have a few different beer clubs. And so anything from huge imperial stouts aged in bourbon barrels for over a year to sort of lambic-like creations. Flemish Red is one of our Oudtart is one of our favorite beers, and we make a huge variety. We try not to make anything that's too typical. So we don't make IPAs. We don't make any entry-level beers. we have the rest of the 3,000 plus brewers in America doing that for us, so we just try to do stuff that's a little bit off the beaten path.
I'm curious to know whether or not this is a good segue. That's debatable. I'm curious to know about your new project that you announced earlier this summer, where you're going to be focusing on sours and more farmhouse styles.
Yeah, so we're opening up,
which I can't pronounce.
It's Brewery Taru. Taru means earthy in French. So these are kind of earthy-driven flavors, whether it be fruit that we're adding, to the Brettanomyces wild yeast that we add.
Switch mics, guys.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, from a logistical standpoint, it makes a lot more sense to have our wild beers made in one location.
Absolutely.
on separate bottling lines, separate bright beer tanks, and allows us to have a separate staff that's only doing sour and funky beers and really develop that specialty. You know, it takes a lot of specialized knowledge to, I think, do these styles really well. I think we do a really good job right now, but I think we could do better if that's all that they were focused on.
And then, what made you want to pull the trigger, you know, in 2014 to jump into this in a bigger way?
Well, probably the biggest thing is that we needed to upgrade our bottling line. So we got it put in we're in the process of putting in a very expensive bottling line for our clean beers or non-sour beers. And this allows us to take our current bottling equipment and move that over to the sour side. So it's, yeah, it's all about money, really, just spending lots of money.
And Ben, you know, in many years at Beercraft, I mean, you've probably tasted more beers than anyone in this room.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's debatable. I drink a lot of beers. We did your release in New York when you guys came to New York about 6 years ago. I mean, we had a pin of Cuvée Jaune, which was just the jam, man. That beer was outstanding. And also, we've seen like the breadth, you know, the breadth of beer too. Like everything from like you were saying, you're like sour reds and sour browns and high alcohol things, all the way down to that IPL that you guys make, that lager that's as hoppy as any IPA out there. Which, you know, as far as entry level beers go, not necessarily an entry level, kind of blows the doors off entry level, but that is an outstanding hoppy offering.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's for all practical purposes, it's an IPA, but it's not because we use lager yeast, you know, and we put in 10% rice just to, you know, give it that American lager punch.
You know, going back 6 years, Patrick, tell us about, you know, when you first came to the New York market. I remember seeing you at one of the first New York City beer weeks, and I think we featured your beer once at Jimmy's number 43 then. Yeah. But what brought you to New York City, and what's it like for you, you know, being part of this marketplace and the different beers that you send here that you don't send, you know, that you don't send, you know?
Right. New York's a super important market for us as far as having just a ton of people. It's, you know, a lot of influencers, so it's amazing. You know, we wanted to come early on in our life as a brewery. We were in New York. I think we were probably like 8 months old when we came in. And I think it's a crucial part of our success is getting our beer to people who you know, write about it, talk about it. You know, I'm here today probably because it's you know, because we made that decision. So thank you, New York.
All right, man. Well, cheers. What's the beer that we're drinking?
Yeah.
So we're drinking Mocha Wednesday. This is Black Tuesday. Cheers. With coffee from Portola Coffee and Portola Coffee Lab in Costa Mesa, not too far from us. And coconut nibs from Cho in San Francisco. I think they're Ecuadorian coconut nibs, but we have a chocolate guy here, so I don't want to talk too much about chocolate and seem stupid. Anyway, pretty fun beer. I believe high 18s, maybe 18.7%. We've only made this beer once, and we will be making it again.
Ben, have you ever had something like this before? Was this eight? We had this last night at the Ginger Man. It's 18% stout.
Definitely not, no.
And you, Ben? Ben
it other stands beer? Out for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, definitely stands out. I mean, there's other big stouts out there, but also like the coffee and chocolate and like just all this kind of like other, you know, bigness to it. It's
but how do you make how do you make a beer like this? It's 18%. It's a stout. It's really good.
Thanks. We do so during the boil, the no sugar goes in. It's just all malt. So a ton of Carafa 3 and use probably 8 different malts. I can't remember what they all are, but essentially, we start out with a lower gravity than what we want to get to, and we, during fermentation, that's when, you know, the magic happens. We're adding sugar or some sort of sugar source every day, So letting the yeast kind of reduce osmotic pressure, whether you know the pressure of essentially sugar against the yeast cell, allowing you know it to convert alcohol, then we'll add sugar. So kind of a gentle process, getting that yeast super drunk.
What's this pixie dust here on the label? Is that something? I'm just messing around.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So is it like adding candied sugar, like the way they do in some Belgian strong beers?
Yeah. Well, it's similar in that it you know is going to lighten the flavor and increase alcohol, and we'll recirculate the beer with a pump to keep the yeast in suspension. We're adding oxygen during fermentation. Maybe just crack it once a day just to keep those yeast happy. Yeah, adding oxygen during fermentation is usually not a good thing to do, but for these beers, kind of needs it. And some yeast nutrient. And we you know, do yeast viability a few times a day just to make sure that the yeast is still happy.
And Ben Granger, you know, you're a great home brewer. Have you ever made a beer this strong before?
No, I don't really... homebrewers, it's really hard to make this kind of a beer, just like Patrick was saying, because there's so much yeast care that goes into it. Like he was saying, you know, extra O2, incremental feedings, kind of keeping the yeast up in suspension. You're kind of getting yeast to do something that it's just not really naturally doesn't want to do. I mean, you know, think about it for a second in the terms of like what it would be like to live in an environment that has 18% your own waste. You know what I mean? So, like, getting yeast to, like, be happy and still eat and still reproduce and still, like, and still make alcohol is pretty tough for homebrewers to make that clean of 18%. Yeah. You can get it up there. There's, you know, stillers, yeast, and all sorts of stuff. There's tricks that you can do. But, like, still getting it, like, that clean and that drinkable and also with – because this is it's a beautiful beer. It's 18%.
This does not seem like an 18%.
Yeah, that's the thing. The higher alcohols are not, I mean, when somebody gives you a beer and they're like, hey, you know, this is, you know, X and X percent of alcohol, at a certain point, you're just going to taste alcohol. You're going to taste the alcohol no matter what. But this one is particularly clean. And there's no, you know, higher alcohols that oftentimes come with, you know, a beer that is on the plus side of 10%. You know, there's nothing crazy there, but which is hard to produce, like near impossible to produce at home.
Yeah, I think aging's a important part of that.
For sure, the conditioning. Yeah,
these beers are often quite hot and not delightful out of the fermenter, and then after you know 12 months plus in a bourbon barrel, the edge is really taken off.
It's a nice example. I mean, I think that some people have used barrel aging as like a crutch, and this is one that I really like. So
good. Thank you.
What do you think, Ben? Well, I mean, you're out there with Beer Advocate, and are a lot of people doing what Patrick's doing, or is he really like a step above everybody else?
I do think, and this is an example that sets them apart, but I don't think, by and large, people are not quite as wide-ranging. I have to say, I don't think there's a predominance of brewers this creative that dial it in like this beer is. Even your point about barrel aging, I think a lot of people, it's a way that you can get people excited about your beer, but I think a lot of people kind of rush it.
Why barrel age an okay beer just so it tastes like whiskey? I mean,
because really. You can sell it for more money.
Yeah. To suckers. Come on. Yeah. But not guys in this room. Come on. This is an esteem. We've got Phil. He's a rep from Union Beer. His job was driving Patrick around all day. So, Phil, where did you take Patrick?
All over Brooklyn, started up north, went to Torst, swung by Dirk the Norseman, new brew pub that's open up in Greenpoint, then went down south, went to Bargrate Harry, Beercraft, Double Windsor.
So you're like his body man, right?
Pretty much.
So if he's the president, you're the guy that plays golf, you know?
Oh, man, Phil's taking a bullet.
good cop, bad cop.
So what are like when you go to these accounts? So that's part of your job. You take them to accounts who buy his beer. What do they want to know about Patrick? I mean, they're just like, they love his beer. I mean, what's a typical interaction when you go to these accounts?
Pull back the curtain, Phil. Pull back the curtain.
You know, I mean, a lot of the places that I go to, they're already very well familiar with the brewery and, you know, kind of beer sells itself. This stuff is all really fantastic, especially the Smoke of Wednesday. This is really nice. But, I mean, just today, for example, it's like getting to introduce him to all the people that are humongous fans of his beers. So pretty much going around and getting to be happy enough to drive with him for a day. So,
and then where are you going after the show?
I am deciding whether or not I'm going to go to the Guilty Goose for the event tonight. But I was out pretty late at the Ginger Man last night. So what's
at the Guilty Goose tonight?
I don't know. It's what I think 7 draft lines from the brewery. Some more of the limited release stuff that, you know, we don't generally get out here. And I think people are going to be bringing some of their vintage bottles from, like, you know, their own cellars, and kind of a bottle share / brewery event with Patrick being there. So
wow. Well, how do you guys? This is what I want to get to the gist of. Is how do you guys set this up? I mean, Patrick came to New York. You know, and suddenly in 3 or 4 days, there's all these really cool events. I mean, is that what you guys are doing as distributors? Or is he doing that himself? No, he says no. Tell us, Patrick, your experience.
Probably know better than I
would. Because it is kind of cool. It's like the journey of, you know, you're a brewer, you're based in Orange County, California. But when you go somewhere, people really turn out.
Yeah, our distributor union does a fantastic job from planning, initially having an idea, hey, let's do your tasting room, essentially, at the Ginger Man, to, you know, coordinating, with the account. So it's awesome. We don't have any sales reps as a brewery, so we really rely on distributors to kind of make these events happen. And guys at the Ginger, I mean, I didn't do anything. I shut up. I did it. Well, I put together a cheese pairing, but some of my employees, you know, figured out how to get all these kegs there, and you know, it was a lot of work for someone, but I'm not going to take credit.
Well, we're having a lot of fun. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
We got a great event coming up, co-hosted by Slow Food USA, Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's The Silver Snail, 25 Years of Slow Food. It's been 25 years since Carlo Petrini and a group of activists launched a peaceful revolution to defend regional traditions, good food, gastronomic pleasure, and a slow pace of life. The slow food movement has since evolved into a comprehensive approach to food that recognizes the strong connections between plate, planet, people, politics, and culture. Today, this movement involves thousands of projects and millions of people in more than 160 countries worldwide. Join us for a dialogue between Slow Food's founder Carlo Petrini and locavore activist Alice Waters as they reflect on the evolution of the food movement and all things slow. That's Friday, October 3rd from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. One of the great things about being in the studio is that we're in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, and both Patrick Rue and his body man from Union Beer are chowing down on pizzas right now. So Ben Granger, our man on the street, our ultimate beer expert of homebrew, draft systems, growlers, and all that, what were you commenting on about?
You know, one of the things I was always remarked on is when you guys came to New York, it was kind of a clutch time, especially for the style of beer that you were producing in New York. I mean, if you go back 10 years as a bottle shop, 10 years ago, I would have a door full of Cantillon and people would return them telling me that they had gone bad, you know, but at the time that you guys hit New York, it started, you know, right around that time in the Northeast and especially in New York City, started the buzz of what it meant to brew Flemish Red, what it meant to make, you know, sour beer, what it meant to have these kind of bigger, larger, and especially the wilder, the sour styles. And so I think one of the things is when you guys hit the market here, the takeoff was incredible because it was almost coincided, you know, it was almost like 2 months before the market was like, hey, we're ready for sour beer, the market at large. And I don't mean,
you're right. It was also around the time that first New York Beer Week started. And Ben Keen, you've been around a long time. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, I mean, I really agree. Actually, I used to live... Because
Patrick's eating pizza right now.
Down the block from Beer Craft 10 years ago. 4th Avenue, Garfield. That was my go-to place. And yeah, there was a time when, you know, every bodega didn't have, you know, trade winds or whatever sitting on the shelf. And you could go to one place or, you know, another place in Manhattan to find those rare things. And it's just been like, you know,
it's
nothing but up since then.
Watch it. Yeah. Ben Keen, tell us the names of some of the brewery beers, because there's so many.
Oh, geez. I don't know. I'm
triple,
the best person to rattle them all off. There's Hottenroth, if I'm pronouncing
Orchard
it correctly.
Orchard something.
I mean, it's kind of a dazzling array. A lot of breweries, you know, as we were saying at the top of the show, you know, you're an IPA brewery. You are, you know, you're focusing on the darker end of the spectrum, and you're doing brown ales and stouts and porters and that kind of thing.
Like a left hand, right?
Yeah, you're you know, a German wheat beer brewery or whatever. But there are not a lot of people who are bold enough and, you know, confident enough and talented enough to just say, like, you name it, we'll do it.
Right,
Ben Granger, you tell us some of the other names of the different breweries.
You know,
it's an ode to brewery.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, there's the whole Christmas series. There was the Ode Tart, and was it Black Tuesday?
Saison
de Lent. The rye saison that you guys make, that is like... Yeah.
Autumn maple.
Yeah, the autumn maple.
You're still eating, Patrick. You can't
talk.
You guys
let me know if you need any help.
You're eating pizza. Patrick came early. He's been traveling all day. He's been doing sales calls, and now we're letting him eat his pizza. But he wants to talk.
Saison de Lent. Saison de Lent was like...
One thing great about Patrick Rue is that your beer really does speak for you. And, you know, like, we've talked about...
Listen carefully.
Last night we talked about authentic... Like, we were at Ginger Man, and there are a lot of beer guys there. Authenticity in beer, and, you know, something about someone like Patrick Rue who he's, you know, they walk the talk, is that it, or talk the walk, but whatever you do, you make the beer and it speaks for you. But there are other guys that are coming out and they haven't really established themselves, and this is an important point about beer right now. Everyone's getting into beer. It's like, oh, I met some guy, I'm not gonna say this on the air, I met a guy who's like, suddenly told me that, oh, by the way, you know, I've been doing whatever I've been my whole life, but my family can back me for $3 million, and I've never made beer and never done anything before. And so it's kind of like, you know, there's the other side of breweries where it's like, whoa, suddenly everyone wants to make a craft brewery. I mean, there's 8 people that have contacted me about opening a brewery in New York City.
That's crazy.
The thing is, the difference, like with Patrick, you know, his beer speaks for itself. And I think that's why we're letting you eat. And we're talking for you, because...
Excellent.
But what are some of the other
names? Trying to think of the
names
of these beers.
Some of the names of the beers, because you've must have made, what, 100 beers?
I think we have something like, I want to say 220 beers, or, I mean, things that have names, essentially. So they could be like one single cask treatment, but you got to give it a name, right? Everything needs a personality.
Without a name.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's pick like 3. Okay, so Autumn Maple, that's a great beer. When did you first make that?
We first made that, so we opened up, essentially started selling beer in May of 2008, and that was released in September of 2008, so pretty early.
So that's something where you got it to a high alcohol strength, but there's great flavor. That have anything to do with the maple syrup?
It's only 10%.
That's
no
high,
big
though.
Deal. Come on,
session, double digits.
We're beer sessions radio, but really, like, to you, that, but for us, that 10%, it's so smooth and great.
Yeah, I think it's partly due to our yeast strain. It's super high attenuating, meaning it ferments everything that it can, leaves very little residual sugar, but produces really nice esters, which increase the... It seems like it's a sweet. It seems like it has sugar left, but it's really these esters that that leave that perception of sweetness. And then, yeah, maple syrup leaves some really nice kind of woodsy flavors. We use yams, which have a nice sweet flavor. We don't use a lot of bitterness, so the balance of the beer leans more towards sweetness than not, but by having it attenuate, it still is fairly dry. Doesn't, you know, it's not sticky. So they're strong, but or a lot of our beers are strong, but somewhat easy to drink.
All right. And then who wants to ask him about another beer? All right, Saison de Lent.
Yeah, that beer is the stuff, man. Like one of the early like Saison Americans. You know what I mean? Like as far as like a benchmark Saison American.
Well, excellent. Yeah, Saison de Lent. Yeah, he's a pretty simple base of just Hero.
Tell us the story. Yep. How did you come up with that beer, Saison de Lent?
I do not remember.
Your process though is
next question.
Do you guys mess around? No, I mean, do you make a pilot batch first? How do you come up with a recipe for your new beers? How about that?
Yeah. Well, back in the day, we would brew 10-gallon batches pretty much on my homebrew system, and if they tasted somewhat okay, we would go with it because we found they're so different from brewing it on our small system versus our large system. There was a lot of differences. Today we have a 3-barrel pilot system that has, you know, all the features that our large system has. So we're able to brew a beer and it will, you know, we'll scale it up and it'll taste the same on the larger system. So it's really valuable. We have a full-time experimental brewer who does all these pilot beers.
What's that person's name?
Andrew Bell.
All right, Andrew.
Andrew, woo. Good job, buddy.
All right. Why don't you give a shout-out to a couple of your other team members? Because I know you have a great, great thing going on there.
Yeah, Tyler King's our director of brewing operations, does a fantastic job. I don't want to single too many people out because then I'll be ignoring people. But we have, I think, close to 55 or around 55 wonderful employees that are just make my job very easy. So thanks, guys.
So, and you said Autumn Maple, you put yams in it too. So you're saying you'll never make a crappy pumpkin beer. What about pumpkin? Let's go.
Amen.
Ben Keen and Ben, what about pumpkin beers?
I mean, that's a whole show to itself, man.
But
that's
why do the people make pumpkin beers?
They sell really well.
How do you explain that without incredibly offending a whole bunch of people? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they sell really well.
You guys are the beer experts.
Now, pumpkin, it does. It sells really, really well. People start asking for pumpkin beer in August. And so there are some breweries that then deliver pumpkin beer in July, which... I mean, I keep a pretty serious garden, man. My pumpkins ain't ready in July, that's for sure.
I know you do. You're the first person to ever talk about hops on this show, too.
Years
ago.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? I mean, you want to talk about pumpkin beers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I kind of am of the opinion that pumpkin beers aren't necessarily about the beer. It's about, you know, marketing it for the season, and it's about an ingredient that people understand. Like, even people who aren't really adventurous beer drinkers will buy and try a pumpkin beer, you know, with the freaking cinnamon around the rim of your glass or whatever. And I think that's what a lot of companies are tapping into. People think, you know, fall and holidays and, you know, Christmas and whatever, and it's these flavors, and that's what it's about. It's not a beer thing to me so much.
Yeah, it's like the beer companies, they tap a feeling. They tap that sense of like, you know, the season's changing and that kind of thing.
The smells wafting from mom's oven. Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving, all of these, and Halloween, all of these great things that we're all nostalgic for, you know. And it's this, you know, I guess the sad part is that, you know, fall time is hop harvest, you know, and so I always thought, like, hey, fall beers should be these really big wet IPAs, but the market at large just doesn't know. They're like, you know, they just don't know.
You know, though, it is coming to that, because, like, just last weekend, Barry delivered to me the Hoplantic, which was a very super fresh. It was a pale ale with this, like, subtle dose of wet hops, and I drank it all weekend. It was so sweet, and I've been a big fan of, and I know you are, too. Mm-hmm. Of these fresh or wet hop beers, you know, in the fall. Do you get access to any fresh hops or wet hops, Patrick?
Yeah, we do. They're extremely expensive. You pretty much have to FedEx them overnight to reach us in time to... They're pretty much going to spoil within, you know, 48 hours, so you got to use them super quick.
So if you have or will make a wet hop beer, what would your approach be?
I mean, well, we make a few wet hop beers a year. Pretty much the hops come in at pretty random times. They're all harvested at the same time. So we'll do single hop, on our pilot system, so it'll it's very manageable. So for bittering, we'll typically use pellet hops because the wet hops are so expensive that it doesn't make a lot of sense, and you know, who cares where the bitterness really comes from. We'll fill up essentially all the aroma hops come from filling up our mash tun with those hops. They take up a huge amount of room, and we essentially use our mash tun as a hop back going on its way to the heat exchanger.
That's awesome.
It's a really nice aroma.
That's great. Awesome. Mash tun hop back?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty serious. That's pretty like... I like you were nonchalant. You're like, we just fill the mash tun with hops. Man, we use that as a hop back. That's it. That's all.
You got yams. You got fresh hops. And why do people call it? Some people call it fresh hops. Some call it wet hops.
Oh, well, I think the fresh hop term. I think Sierra Nevada, which is one of my favorite breweries, uses that term for more like recently dried hops. So. They are, you know, really fresh and really, you know, delicious. Where the wet hops are, you know, still wet. That's pretty much all hops need to go through a drying process. Otherwise, they won't last more than 2 days. They get mildewy. So, fresh hop meaning, you know, something that was just recently.
So the flavor,
dried.
The wet hop versus the fresh hop, the flavor is very different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think with the wet hop, you're getting a lot of chlorophyll, so you get a very green flavor. You get the hop oils are all there. You know, the drying process is going to volatilize some of those oils. But personally, I prefer fresh hops over wet hops. Wet. Yeah,
and the wet hops too. With fresh hops, you can start to finish with fresh hops. With wet hops, if you start to finish with wet hops, I mean, in the brew process, it comes out tasting like plants. At the end of it,
yeah,
you know, it's like you get so much chlorophyll that you're just like, oh, this tastes like my yard,
grass,
lawn clippings, delicious.
Well, then we're talking about wine. You know, there's wines that are smell like grass, but
grapes are best consumed fresh.
We need one. I think Jack, we need one of those sound effects where I can just tap my fingers, then you do like the tap tap. You have like a cymbal or drum sound effect.
Oh, Jack. you mean a rim shot?
Kind of something like that.
I don't know what
it is. We're in a very fancy radio studio, Heritage Radio Network. And by the way, if you haven't been a member, you should join Heritage Radio Network. All
well,
right.
Thank you.
Let's take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Talk more about Patrick Rue, the brewery, good beer, and we'll start having some beer and chocolate pairings on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Doing songs till we hit the mountains. Cause you could never have enough of what you want.
So you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, greatbrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. Greatbrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Pizza. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Patrick Rue from the brewery is here. He's chowing down on Roberta's pizza. Ben Keene, the new editor of Beer Advocate. Congratulations. And Ben Granger, our buddy. And a new guy walked in. Andy, our good buddy from New Chocolate, one of the finer chocolate establishments in New York City. Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks
so first, Patrick, we've been drinking your mocha beer. Tell us about it because, again, I've had some crazy beers from you the last 2 days, so this is one of the craziest.
Yeah, so we got we have real chocolate, and we have liquid chocolate going around. So Mocha Wednesday is made for just our Hoarder Society members, so But, well, not too many folks get to try the beer. Sorry, everybody.
Was that a joke, or are they actually called the Hoarder Society?
They actually are called the Hoarder Society. So we have a club called the Reserve Society, and this Hoarder's kind of, you know, some of these guys had like 2 to 3 memberships, and they would buy, you know, they're just buying cases and stuff, and which I really appreciate.
So that's the way to do it. If you really want your beer, is what? You can get multiple memberships under different names?
Yeah. No, you can do the
same
name.
Dude, that's kind of crazy, right, Ben? I mean,
it's a little crazy, but actually there
are fun.
There are a handful of breweries that are doing these kind of membership societies. I don't know how many of them encourage you to sign up 6 times and, you know, get as many bottles as you can possibly do. But yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's a great way for smaller breweries, especially the ones that making specialty beers that, you know, where one bottle or something, you know, goes around. So essentially, we made it for them for this year's release and Black Tuesday with Coconut Nibs and coffee. So
the process of getting these beers. So last night at Ginger Man, I know you had these different beers, the 18%, 90% stouts and things. So will you have a very limited allotment, and then what? You just ship them to New York?
Yeah, essentially for yesterday was just shipping stuff that we would never send to – well, typically don't make it out to accounts for fairly small releases that we just save for a rainy day, I guess.
I mean, we've heard about new breweries that are doing like CSA-type rollouts, but really your clubs, that's an integral part of your local –
Yeah, it's really important.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, we have members in many states, but we can only ship within California. So we'll have you know, family members in California ship out all over the place, and you know, thanks, Mom, for doing that.
You know how to do it. Okay, we won't talk about that, but it's one of the things. And Ben, with you for a beer advocate, I mean, are these some of the stories that you guys cover? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, we try to sort of balance taking beer seriously but not too seriously. And we want to be paying attention to what's going on in the beer world, what trends are important, what is new and exciting that's happening in beer. We try to stay away from, you know, top 10 lists and, you know, like we were saying before, with pumpkin beers, we're never going to do a story on, you know, how to have the perfect holiday meal with the perfect holiday beers. Yeah, so all kinds of stuff. We're looking at the beer scene nationwide, not just, you know, East Coast or West Coast. There's awesome stuff happening in, you know, tiny little towns in the middle of nowhere, and there's awesome stuff happening in, you know, smack dab in Midtown Manhattan at the Ginger Man. And so that's what we're trying to keep track of and sort of, you know, catalog, I suppose you might say.
All right.
What? What do you want from me? I just had a chocolate and I can't think.
Yeah, tell us about the chocolates.
Patrick's getting warmed up. Okay, Andy from Nunu Chocolate, we go way back when you guys first rolled out. Yeah. We used to have it at Jimmy's number 43, so it's so good to see you, Ian.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
So what's new with Nunu Chocolates? Because you make some great stuff.
Well, thanks. Well, tonight I just brought some of our Nunu 6-packs, which is 6 pieces of chocolate. Each one has a different craft beer mixed into the ganache. And we always rotate what we have on draft at the shop in Brooklyn. And so that box always changes. So people just look at the side and just they see what's on. That's what's on tap. So,
but so you guys, when you open your shop, you also serve beer and wine, right?
Yeah, yeah. We figured we're going to be there making chocolates for about 14, 16, sometimes 18 hours a day. Why not leave the door unlocked so people can come in and have a coffee at 7 a.m. or a glass of Pinot Noir at 7 p.m. or a, you know, I'm a big craft beer fan. So,
what kind of beers do you guys serve in your chocolate shop?
Well, anything that's on, you know, that's in these chocolates right here. And from the brewery, we've made chocolates out of Tart of Darkness. I'm going to mess this pronunciation up, but the Rooibrod, is that how you say it?
I can't even say that beer right.
Yeah, it's the rye. You know?
It's, from a Torts, I think it's...
Which one was it?
It's like Woodblow.
Yeah.
some Danish guy is just going to haul off and punch you.
Well, wait till I get home, because my wife is half Danish, half South African, so I just murdered her language. But
whoa, Oscar Pistorius?
Yeah.
Sorry. Wrong country.
But No. But
wrong subject.
We're just getting wild here. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So, what about these beer infused chocolates? How does that work? How do you get them to taste like my favorite beer?
We make a lot of ganache pieces. So basically, a ganache is the softer chocolate that's in the center, and of like something that's harder in the shell. And so you do that by mixing cream and chocolate together, and you infuse the cream with whatever kind of flavoring you want. So for our Earl Grey truffle, we steep the cream in organic Earl Grey tea leaves, and then that imparts the bergamot flavor, and then you mix that with the chocolate, and that's how you get the piece. For this, we substitute the different beers for that cream. So that becomes what you're working with as it kind of came from working with both Jimmy and Ben Granger. We were doing a lot of chocolate and beer pairings. We were doing a lot of chocolate and wine pairings, and it just ended up being like, well, why don't we take the middleman out of the equation and actually use the beer as the ingredient, so the pairing becomes one bite.
But doesn't using beer instead of cream or dairy change the texture?
It makes it healthier,
for sure. it adds vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. And you know, it actually says, the funny thing is, I knew these guys for years, and I didn't even know, Nunu Chocolates Beer Box. I didn't even know that all these chocolates were made with beer, man. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Patrick, what do you think? I mean, have you done beer and chocolate pairings?
This is amazing. We have, yeah, on Valentine's. Well, sorry, you're probably shaking your head in very cliche, but Valentine's Day, we always partner up with a chocolatier and do a flight of beer and a flight of chocolate, and it's great for couples to come in and do that before going out to dinner or maybe after dinner as a dessert. But should definitely do it more.
What do you think of the beers that you have? Type of ganache, you know, chocolates. Which of your beers would go best with them in the pairing?
Boy, I think our sour beers would go really well with these. I think I like beer pairings that provide contrast. So the tartness offset on chocolate sounds really good.
That's actually one of the biggest things that I find to be a mistake when. You know, we mentioned what we do, you know, combining these things, doing pairings or using them in the chocolate. A lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, they recommend some imperial stout that already has the notes of chocolate or coffee. And I'm exactly with you, Patrick, where I like the contrast, because if you're playing it up, then they just kind of meld and you don't really get that unique character to it. So it's something where, you know, wow, this actually creates a whole new thing going on, and there's this new dance that's happening with the pairing. So we tend to shy away from things that are already inferred, like the big stouts or something. And sometimes that's great, but it's not necessarily the right way to go. You could go with we'd use Ballast Point Sculpin all the time, and that grapefruit really pops out in the hops, and
citrus and chocolate can be really nice. Yeah,
yeah, totally. Some of the wheat beers go really well. You would think they would be a bit overwhelmed. Saisons kind of add something. So you just have to find the right balance, but you can let those things play in a really cool way.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Well, I agree with you agreeing with me.
All right.
Well, I like you so much.
Let's hug.
Hug on air. All right. Well, cheers to everybody. This is fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ben Granger, what's the beer that you brought for us, a growler here?
I brought a couple of beers from Other Half. I brought their Southern Hopalistic and their All Green Everything. Southern Hopalistic is an IPA all done with Southern Hemisphere hops. And the All Green Everything is their triple IPA. which is a really good time.
Knock on that note, I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Our boy Justin Kennedy and his buddy Matt Coates, this summer they traveled with other half delivery guys one day. And this Thursday, if you're in New York City on Thursday, Browery Lane, Matt Coates has a photo exhibit of he went beyond other half and a few others. He did some photos of guys self-distributing in New York City, which is one of the very cool things that happens here, too. And you guys know, as Union, too, it's like to deliver beer is pretty crazy, right? I mean, New York City, what? There's stairs and you got to go. I mean, it must be really hard to people don't realize how hard it is to distribute beer in New York.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, you've got people carrying 160-plus pound half barrels of beer down flights of stairs. Hopefully they have, like, what is a keg slide, which is basically a ladder that you can slide the kegs down, but a lot of the times those stairwells are too narrow and you don't have that sort of thing, so it's pretty tricky, and yeah, it's kind of a physically taxing thing to do. So
if you're in New York on Thursday night, go to Browery Lane. Check out Matt Coates' photos because they're pretty awesome. And Ben, do you guys ever cover anything like that in Beer Advocate? Like
we
cover
the
work of beer guys. And
yeah, I mean, we're not just about breweries; we're about the whole sort of, you know, beer universe. So distributors, people who make, you know, sort of cheese and chocolate and, you know, breads with spent grain. We've talked about, you know, working conditions at breweries. You know, our current issue, we talk about craft beer kind of making inroads at sports stadiums and sporting venues around the country. So there's, you know, anything that beer touches is fair game for Beer Advocate. And, you know, that's what we're interested in, is sort of exploring where has beer culture been and where is it going. That's what we're trying to talk about and celebrate.
Congrats on your new job. And is there anything you want to say about the brewery to wrap it up?
Make more beer, please. No, the Tart of Darkness, I have to say, that was that 2012 that it first, you know, kind of appeared nationally? Am I making that up?
That sounds right, yeah.
So that was my beer of 2012. I was at Carton Brewing, hanging out with Augie. Ben's got their shirt on right now. Shout out to Carton. I was hanging out with Augie at Carton, and he was like, hey, somebody just left this this brewery beer here. You want to try it with me? And I said, well, sure. And it was Tart of Darkness, and it blew me away. It was phenomenal. So, yeah, please, I want to say, make more beer.
Working on it. Thank you.
All right. And Patrick, anything else you want to say to wrap up the show?
This has been a lot of fun. Hopefully it's as much fun for you at home.
Did you get to eat all your pizza?
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thank you.
And Ben Granger, what's new with you, man? You're doing some cool – you're making cool systems.
I've got a lot of kind of – I have a lot of irons in, yeah, and a lot of irons in the fire right now. But currently I'm helping Andy open his tap room in Park Slope. But I'm just freshly launched a company called Pearl Black Innovations, specializing in draft innovations for bars and restaurants and breweries and things like that. So I'm doing lots of fun, crazy, weird stuff. I will build anything for anybody.
Last question. So at our event, our recent event, Pig Island, you worked with one of the cider importers.
Yeah, Rowan. Yeah.
And what did you do? You hooked up a cask so it would shoot cider out.
So I worked in the North Spain a long time ago, and one of the things that you see is like that. The cider makers, the cedar makers, have these like big, like 5,000-liter Grundys that have like a valve on the side of them. And because the liquid is so low carbonation, it's like a half a volume, a quarter volume, it's a very low carbonation, that you have to pour it hard to break the what little CO2 there is. It creates a phenomenon called it creates carbolic oxalation. So basically it helps to snap the phenolics out of suspension and opens the cider up. So they have these Grundys, and you open this valve, and it shoots cider out like 15 feet in this tiny, tiny little stream, and you catch that in a glass. And Rowan approached me and said, hey, can you recreate this on a small scale? So I built them one on a small scale. So it's this, you know, 55-gallon oak barrel that's got a smaller jockey box in it, and I branded, because I do, you know, I do a lot of metal work, so I branded the side, you know, with their branding. But at 12 pounds, it shoots a 7-foot stream. So I figure, like, I'm building them a nozzle for it, and I'm rifling the inside of the nozzle so we get less dispersion over longer shots. So what I'm hoping is I'll be able to stand like 20 feet away, and they'll just quick open and close the valve, and I'll catch it all in a glass.
On a more basic level, if I was going to open a bottle shop and I wanted to have the ultimate growler fill, should I call you?
Absolutely, man. Counter pressure all the way. Growler Reform NYC. And you people stop pouring them off of a tap. Ruining the beer.
Cheers to Ben Granger, who really set the standard for growler fills in New York City. All right, guys. And a couple of shout-outs for special events. Again, this Thursday, if you're in New York City, Browery Lane, Matt Coates did this undercover, you know, hangout with self-distribution photo, you know, exhibit at Browery Lane. It's going to be very cool on Thursday night. Also tonight, Guilty Goose, if you're in New York City and you're listening live, Patrick Rue and his team is going to be there at Guilty Goose. Coming up on Saturday, Blocktoberfest. It's the New York City Brewers Guild. They're coming together. They're getting ready for New York City Beer Week. And they're going to have an awesome event in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. And we're producing also October Feast. It's going to be a special event at the Seaport October 11th. You will see the best of German beer. Be United and Shelton Brothers are going to be there with some specialty American beers. So a lot of things coming up in New York City. And thanks so much. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Patrick, Ben. And everybody else, Phil and Andy, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.